Have you ever wondered how countries are, you know, really preparing their next generation for a world where tech isn't just a subject, but it's, well, it's fundamental, like a language everyone needs?
It's a huge question right now.
It really is. So today, our deep dive is all about global technology education. We've been looking at this really fascinating document from the Japan Society of Technology Education, JSTE.
That's right, the Global Technology Education 2025 report.
Exactly. And it's packed with details, charts, and some pretty cool examples of student projects.
Some really vivid stuff in there.
Yeah. So our mission for you is to kind of unpack what tech ed really means globally. It's way more than just coding, right?
Oh, absolutely. Much broader.
We want to compare how different places are weaving this into schools and pull out some surprising facts, some key trends.
Let's get into it.
Okay, so before we jump into the country comparisons, let's set the stage. This JSTE document, it paints a really wide picture of technology education. What actually falls under that umbrella for them? It's clearly not just IT.
No, not at all. It's a really comprehensive framework, actually. They break it down into four main pillars. They overlap quite a bit, too.
Okay, four pillars. What's the first one?
First up is the technology of materials and processing. So think about the physical world here.
Like making things.
Exactly. Stuff like biomimicry,
mm-hmm.
you know, designing based on nature, prototyping, structural design, and then things like digital fabrication and 3D modeling, using digital tools to create real objects.
Got it. Physical creation, design, using tech, that already feels broader. What's next?
Pillar two is the technology of information. Now, this is probably closer to what most people think of first.
Right, the more digital side.
Yeah. So smart nation concepts, using tech in cities, how ICT information and communication technology is used across different subjects, blending the physical and digital.
Okay.
And then the big ones. Machine learning,
mm-hmm.
AI decision-making, computational thinking, basically. Problem solving like a computer.
Breaking things down logically.
Precisely. And just general digital competence.
Okay, makes sense. Materials, information, what else?
Then number three is the technology of nurturing living things.
Nurturing living things. Now, that sounds interesting. How does that fit into tech ed?
I know, right? It really broadens the scope. This brings in fields like smart agriculture or agritech.
Using tech in farming.
Yeah, sensors, automation, that sort of thing. Also, understanding ecosystems, biotechnology, and even bioethics.
Wow, bioethics. That's unexpected, but important, I guess, with biotech advancements.
It shows a really holistic view, doesn't it? Technology's impact on life itself.
Definitely. Okay, so that's three pillars. What's the fourth?
The final one is the technology of energy conversion.
Energy.
So this covers simulation, embedded systems, you know, the little computers hidden inside devices.
Like in your microwave or car.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also, electricity, motion, advanced mechanisms, system design, and energy control. How we manage and use energy.
That's a really comprehensive list. Materials, information, living things, energy, and you said they overlap.
They absolutely do. And that's really where the innovation happens in those overlaps.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Think about digital fabrication and 3D modeling that clearly connects information tech with materials tech.
Right. Using software to make a physical thing.
Exactly. Or information and communication technology, ICT, that weaves through almost everything. Materials, information, energy.
It's kind of the connective tissue.
It really is. And machine learning connects information with nurturing living things. Think AI in agriculture or biology. Embedded systems link information and energy, like smart grids or energy controls.
It paints a picture of technology as this interconnected system, not just separate subjects.
That's the core idea, I think.
Okay, so let's make this more concrete. The Solstice had some great visuals, right? Can you share some examples that really bring these ideas to life?
Yeah, definitely. For digital fabrication and 3D modeling, there are images of these colorful 3D printed parts, gears, linkages, mm-hmm. mechanical bits.
So functional parts, not just models.
Right. And there's also a CAD model, computer-aided design of an LED lamp.
Yeah.
You see all the components, the aluminum frame, the LEDs, screws, power cord. Even a wooden base. It shows the whole design.
Breaking it down.
Yeah. And they even show 3D printed toothbrushes. It shows how you can apply this tech to like everyday objects, maybe customize them.
Uh-huh. A 3D printed toothbrush. Okay. So it's about the process, the design, understanding how things are made.
Precisely. Then for structural design and prototyping, there's this great image linked to the architect Oscar Niemeyer.
Oh, the Brazilian architect, known for those curves.
That's the one. It shows how his kind of abstract, curvy forms inspired a lamp design. The image breaks down the lamp components and even discusses how light affects its stability. This is a deep dive into functional design inspired by aesthetics.
That's a cool connection between art, architecture, and tech.
Isn't it? And then for computational thinking and algorithms, there's a really neat visual. It's a snippet of Python code.
Okay, actual code.
Yeah, and it shows how this code generates a fractal pattern. Looks a bit like a Kov curve, where a simple line gets replaced by more complex shapes over and over.
So you visually see how a few lines of code can create something really intricate.
Exactly. It makes the abstract concept of an algorithm very visual.
Great example. And what about that nurturing living things pillar? Was there a concrete example for that?
Yes. For smart agriculture, or agritech, combined with embedded systems, there's a photo. It's a plant in a pot, but it's hooked up to this little electronic circuit board with tubes running into the soil.
Ah, so like a smart watering system.
Very likely, yeah. It brings together sensors, maybe some control logic, and biology. It shows tech directly interacting with a living thing.
Okay, these examples really help visualize those four pillars.
Yeah.
Thanks. It gives us a much clearer picture of the what.
The breadth of it all.
Exactly. But now, let's shift gears a bit. How do different countries actually implement this? The when and how much seems just as important. We've got that table comparing 11 countries.
Right, and this is where you see some really interesting national priorities emerge. The table compares subjects and content across these countries.
What are some of the standout approaches you noticed?
Well, you definitely see a strong focus on design and making in some places. Like England has design and technology, explicitly mentioning biomimicry and 3D sketching.
Hands-on stuff.
Very much so. Australia also has design and technology, materials, design, production. Sweden has technology, technic, but also slodge, which is crafts covering wood, metal, evaluating performance.
Slodge, interesting, like traditional craft skills meet tech.
Kind of seems that way. And China's general technology specifically calls out laser cutters, CNC equipment, 3D printers, very focused on modern fabrication tools.
So a definite hands-on design build theme there. What else?
Then there's a clear push towards digital and computational thinking in others. Singapore lists AI, computational thinking, digital competence under digital technology.
Singapore, not surprising, they're heavy on digital.
Right. Taiwan's information technology covers programming, algorithms, networks. China, again, with information science and technology, includes IoT, AI decision-making, prototyping.
So China seems to be hitting both the making and the digital sides pretty hard.
It appears so, based on these course titles. Japan's information courses touch on learning and big data. Korea includes robotics and automation in their practical arts. It highlights that growing need for digital literacy, problem solving with code.
And any other major themes? Maybe applied tech?
Yeah, the third theme I'd pull out is applied technology and systems. France's technology course covers things like energy chains and components.
More engineering focused, maybe.
Seems like it. New Zealand's materials technology actually includes horticultural food technology.
Back to that living things connection.
Exactly. Korea mentions biomedical engineering. The U.S. example from Massachusetts includes biomimicry within technology and engineering. So these show tech being taught in the context of real-world systems, real-world challenges.
Okay, so we see these different focuses, making digital applied systems. Now, let's talk timing, the when and how much. That grade level chart was quite revealing.
It really was. It visually shows different philosophies on, you know, when you start this stuff and how much time you dedicate.
What jumps out regarding when kids start learning this?
Well, there's a real difference in early versus later starts. Some countries go quite early. We mentioned China. They start information science and technology as early as grades 3-8. That's quite young. And they have general technology later in senior secondary.
Wow, grade 3. What about the other end of the spectrum?
Well, look at Japan. Their technology and home economics, which includes the tech component, starts around grades 7 to 9. And their dedicated information subject is mainly high school.
That's a big difference. Elementary school versus junior high or high school start. What about making it mandatory? Is it required everywhere?
It's a real mix there, too. Compulsory versus elective. In Australia, for instance, design and technology is compulsory, but only for years 7 and 8.
So a required taster, maybe?
Seems like it. In France, technology is compulsory in lower secondary. A lot of countries seem to have compulsory bits early on, maybe giving a foundation, and then becomes elective later in high school.
Letting students specialize if they're interested.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Gives everyone some baseline exposure.
Okay, and the big one, instructional time. You mentioned that varies wildly.
It really does. This is maybe the most striking difference. Look at the U.S. example, Massachusetts, again. Technology and engineering could be anywhere from 3 to 8 hours per week, potentially from K-12.
8 hours a week? That's huge.
It's a massive potential commitment. Now, contrast that with Japan. Their technology and home economics is listed as only 0.5 hours per week for grades 7 to 9.
Half an hour compared to potentially 8. That's a vast difference.
It's enormous. Or look at Sweden. Technology, Technik, gets 200 hours total over 9 years. But Slodged, the craft subject, gets 330 hours over the same 9 years.
So more time on craft than core tech in that case. What does this huge variation in time tell us? What are the implications for you listening to this?
That's the key question, isn't it? It suggests really different national strategies. Some nations, like maybe the U.S. example implies, seem to believe dedicated significant time from an early age is crucial.
Baking it in deep.
Yeah. Others, like perhaps Japan's model suggests, might integrate tech skills more broadly across other subjects or prioritize depth later on, or maybe just place less emphasis on dedicated classroom hours for this specific area compared to others.
So maybe it's taught differently, not necessarily less, or perhaps it is just a lower priority in terms of dedicated time.
It's hard to say definitively without seeing the whole curriculum context, but the time allocation difference is undeniable. It points to different philosophies on how best to build that technological literacy. Some go for breadth early, some for depth later, some embed it, some dedicate specific blocks.
It seems some nations really bake technology into the curriculum right from the start. Others introduce it later, maybe less intensely in terms of hours. Different paths to a similar goal, perhaps?
That seems to be the case. Everyone recognizes the need, but the how and when varies dramatically.
So wrapping this up, this deep dive has really shown that global technology education is, well, it's a really rich and diverse field, much more than people might think.
Definitely. It blends the hands-on practical skills with abstract thinking, material science with digital tools, even connecting to biology and energy.
And we've seen how countries are making very different choices, what to teach, when to teach it, how much time to spend. From that hands-on making focus to computational thinking to applied systems.
Yeah, the variety in approach is striking. From those early starts and high hours in some places to later introductions or more integrated approaches elsewhere.
So for you listening, hopefully you now have a clearer, much broader picture of what technology education actually encompasses globally. It's not just about learning to code, is it?
Not at all. It's about understanding complex systems, designing solutions, innovating, problem solving across different fields. It's about technological fluency in a much deeper sense.
Okay, so here's a final thought to leave you with. We know technology is advancing incredibly fast globally. Given these really varied national approaches to tech ed that we've just explored, the different timings, focuses, time commitments, how might that affect things down the line?
Like how could it shape future international collaboration, maybe? Or even shift the balance of global innovation, depending on which approach proves more effective?
Exactly. Something to think about.